Just want to appreciate all of you for hanging in with the practice as we go along. Appreciate sitting with you and just the fact that you're here and supporting each other. I like to think of practice as an act of generosity that in the most immediate sense supports the people who you're sitting with, but also in a longer term sense supports the people who have to live around you every day. So it's really, I'm overjoyed by knowing that this seed is being planted because as one of my teachers, Sri Nisargadatta, puts it, the world is the way it is because people are the way they are. And as long as people are the way they are, the world will be the way it is. And if we want a peaceful world, we have to have peaceful people. It's not something you can impose. Just like calm is not something we can impose. It's something that is the byproduct of being present. Peace as well. So we have a few minutes for questions, comments, descriptions, questions about the instructions, about what you're noticing in your practice, anything else that's been set up to this point. This is the time that I think that I can be most useful, if I can at all. So please don't hesitate, don't be bashful, and it's likely that whatever comment, description, or question you may have will be of some benefit to someone else. So part of our act of generosity. So please.
When we're sitting and we notice a tension or a discomfort in our body, and I sort of try to bring my attention to it, but I also find myself subtly adjusting my body to relieve that discomfort.
Yes.
Is that...
Is it okay to subtly adjust the posture? I think if you love yourself, you want to have relief. So it's such a natural thing to do. It is part of our natural intelligence to find a relief if we can find it. But often our reactive tendency to try to find relief actually adds to our difficulty at being with things that are uncomfortable. So we encourage in this practice to hover a little bit longer with the discomfort, to see if you can find a sense of balance and composure where you can actually feel the discomfort but have your mind be okay. And then if you can respond to it with wisdom by seeing very clearly, it would benefit me to refresh my posture, do something, then do it very deliberately so that it becomes part of a very continuous mindful process rather than a reactive one. So it's about your own intelligence. And that's why even when I invited you to notice periodically notice whether there was resistance or whether you were trying to make something happen. Did anybody notice that? Or did not make sense? Or whether you're building a story about yourself.
Trying to be aware.
Yeah, and that's okay. That part about the intention to be aware is very useful. But there's also add a little extra tension, a kind of strain to that process, and then it usually means we want something else to happen. So the intention to be aware is useful, but doesn't really need a lot of musculature. It needs just the remembering. And if there's extra, there usually you want something else to happen, and if you put extra energy into your practice, it will likely make you very tired. So tiredness often comes from excessive energy, excessive effort. So that those kinds of things can, just by noticing them, our natural intelligence will say you don't need to put that much extra. Or if you're feeling resistant, you don't need to let go. No one in their right mind will practice resistance. Once you notice it, it's the spontaneous result of the heart to release. And so all that happens very organically if we notice what's happening. We don't want to be completely lost in a version of ourselves of somebody who doesn't exist. Because any version of ourselves is somebody who doesn't exist. We don't want to be lost in that. All we simply need to do is notice, oh, there's the me story. And then it usually there's a revelation. Oh, I'm here. That's not the truth. It's just sitting. Didn't need to do anything, just needed to notice that. Please.
Can you speak more about sleepiness from the calmness going the other way, too much the other way, in sitting practice?
Sleepiness, dullness.
The dullness that you were talking about before.
Well, I'd like to say something that's relevant to this part of a retreat, more specific to what's probably happening to a lot of people. If your life has been moving at a certain pace, you come spend some time with other people sitting. It's very quiet. Generally, the outer conditions are fairly peaceful. And our psyche to our brain function, it reminds us a lot like sleep. And our mind will say, hmm. So it takes a while to, in this atmosphere, to remind ourselves that even though it's quiet and mimics a lot of what it's like at nighttime, it's actually a time to wake up. So that adjustment itself takes place. The second thing that's very, very common, I think for people throughout their practice, and this ebbs and flows, but especially as we settle into a retreat, because of the atmosphere, because of the stillness and the quietness, it's common for a level of tranquility to arrive very quickly. We start to feel calm. But because of our energy system is a bit diminished by our daily life and by excessive busyness and living so much in mental speed, excessive discursiveness, and just a lot of reactivity, our energy system is a bit diminished, and when tranquility happens first without a lot of energy, as I probably joked about this and others have joked, the room usually in the beginning of the day looks like the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. But yet this imbalance, we'll call it the imbalance between tranquility and energy, happens throughout our practice at various times. Sometimes we have a lot of tranquility and low energy. Sometimes we have a lot of energy and very low tranquility. That's called restlessness. And those are the things that we do make adjustments. Now, even though I said before we're not trying to calm our mind, when we're restless, though, we do want to help not so much calm our mind, but create the conditions so that our mind comes into balance. And then the byproduct of that would be calm. And the conditions for balancing restlessness would be to have a little more tranquility. And so you might want to work with stillness. You might want to work with spaciousness so that you don't feel like you're corralling. You're putting excessive energy or making your mind too tight. You think of that Zen expression, the way to control a cow is to give it a big pasture. And often that will sometimes balance the restlessness, bring about a little bit more tranquility, and it will... and calm will arise. But it changes all the time. So in this case, if you're sleepy, it usually means your energy is a little bit low. And what we do in the early parts of retreat, and really any part, to balance out sleepiness is we try to arouse energy. And the simplest way would be to take a precise posture. You could practice with your eyes slightly open, not really looking at anything, but just taking in a little light. But to me, the best one that I think is very portable, again, in our daily life for practicing mindfulness is to do standing practice. That little extra energy to hold your body up will sometimes balance the tranquility with a little bit more juice. And then you can, it's very... reason I say it's portable is because whenever we're queuing, standing in line, just being aware of the standing body, just being aware of hearing, standing, the touch of our feet on the ground, or you can connect with your breath is fine. Do the same practice. But that'll help build energy. And then the other function of the walking practice is to help build our energy as well. You may want to take a little slightly faster walk at times, or extremely slow if you can stay in balance. That sometimes arouses energy. Does that speak to your question or no? Please, in the back. Planning. Well, that's planning is a part of life.
But it was a conscious thing. You know, I knew I didn't want to walk on pavement, and I didn't want to.
You love yourself. I think it's perfectly reasonable.
But the second part of it was, so I found my place and I'm walking, and it became conscious of, now I'm going to turn around sometime, and what happened there was there was a tree, so it was there for me. But the whole process didn't feel very spontaneous.
Hmm. And could you say a little bit more about it? Didn't feel spontaneous. It felt too deliberate or too.
Well, yes.
Just not enough. Didn't meet your idea of trust and letting things be, or just flexibility. I'm curious what you mean.
It was just, how I'm not very practiced at walking meditation, and so.
Fair enough.
It was like, how far?
Oh.
Walk?
How far?
And then I'll turn around.
Thank you for that question. I usually highlight that a little bit more in the instructions that. Everybody's temperament is different, and so some people will like a path about as long as this hallway here, this center aisle here, and others will want a slightly shorter one. I tend to like a little slightly longer path, but that part it is parts up to you. But I would say 10 to 30 steps in general, just to so that you don't make it into too big of a project to figure out. Any other part of that?
Well, it was just, I had to sort of pull myself back to refrain from, this is a bit like life, there's uneven ground at times, and, there's all these distractions, or it's the road less taken, or those kinds of things, and so I have to keep pulling myself back.
I think that I understand what you mean by pulling yourself back, but I think the fact that you notice all those things, you don't need to pull back. You just need to notice that your mind is doing that, and that's all part of mindfulness. And you want to give that, you want to treat that equal to the steps, just noticing all the considerations of your mind. Otherwise, we tend to have those kinds of considerations, and then there's a little bit of because of a view we might have that that's not what we're supposed to be doing or something, there'll be a little bit of attention that will kind of tear our attention back to the step. Pretty soon we're developing aversion to thinking and planning and grasping at the steps. And really it's really just creating the conditions to notice our planning mind, our excessive evaluating mind, whatever it is that is our particular tendency, our top tunes. We do have unique characteristics that tend to predominate. And our practice is really to notice that. And that's it. And see what the result is when you do that. If you see that that actually brings you suffering, then you let your intelligence operate on that instead of, this is what I should be doing right now. Do you follow me? I so appreciate your description. That's please.
My question was about the walking meditation as well, which I'm in experience. I just felt, I guess I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing so much, and I'm feeling the grass and the warmth and the cool, and I'm just trying to pay attention to my feet and my legs. But because it's outside and your eyes are open and it's bright, it doesn't have that depth or
yes. That depth is very addictive, isn't it? No, I really appreciate your comment. All of those things are of noticing the grass and the coolness and the warmth. That's all part of what emerges as we feel the sensations of walking. But at first, we just want to be, our primary interest is in just knowing we're present. And if you feel your body, put your body, your attention with the felt experience of your body, you know you're present. That's the general aim. Within that, you will notice all kinds of things. We do, as much as we can, especially initially, want to stay, have our anchor be pretty continuous in our body. Feel the body, feel the body, feel the body. So it becomes a lot about creating the conditions for unification of mind and body. That's the first part. And if we are looking around at the beauty, or if we're excessively planning our path, or planning our meal, or planning our escape, which I'm sure some of you are already doing. Even though eventually that's all part of mindfulness, we can easily, especially when we're not so embodied, we can feel very scattered, like pulled in too many directions. Is that? Yes. Yeah. The sameness is in just keeping it simple, just feeling the bare experience, not elaborating on it with your thoughts too much, just connecting. So again and again, connecting. And I will say, in terms of what to do, I would just give yourself entirely to that, to the simple contact of your feet, the movement of your legs, the sense of presence, sense of being embodied. That's it. Simple, simple, simple. If you do that, then for those of you who are wondering about looking around and all the beauty, that if you really collect yourself in that way, gather your mind, put it in the same location as your body, when you do at times want to look around, and this will actually help you settle into the walking so that you don't feel confined in this simple gathering, periodically stop and take everything in. If you really stay with the sensations, though, when you do stop and take everything in, it'll feel that much more vivid and alive. If, on the other hand, you notice this step, here, 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 here. I know this wasn't your experience, but if you're pulled in all kinds of directions, you'll start to feel like you don't know what to attend to. Keep it very simple at first. As you're more as you're more able to have a continuous sense of steady abiding, a sense of embodiment, then you can literally walk with your mind as though it is like an open sky. Just be in that state of awareness. Let your sensations of steps emerge in that openness. And when a sight comes, let that be, pull your attention. When a sensation of the step comes, let that pull. But for most of us, we're too scattered when we first arrive at a retreat to just be open. We generally need to have a little more collectedness. So just the steps. Keep it so simple. And don't look for anything in particular. It's learned from the inside, the simplicity of it. Any other comments, questions about anything that's been said up to this point? Please.
At the very beginning, you mentioned four things that you wanted to say. Of course, when you said that, I thought, okay, I'm going to hear four things. But I didn't actually hear four things. Would you be able to go again with what you were saying?
Well, I said them very briefly, but first
the
body, just the becoming embodied, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the feeling tone that accompanies every experience, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. I think that's what you're referring to. mindfulness of mind, our different mental states, mental reactions. That usually includes is what I referred to during this last sitting as notice if you're trying to make something happen. The presence or the absence of the what are called the three poisons, greed in the mind, hatred in the mind, or aversion, or delusion in the mind. And then the mind that's concentrated, the mind that's spacious. What's happening to the quality of the mind that's knowing? What's happening in your mind? It may not seem like much right now. What's the state of the mind that's knowing? But that is, you could say that's ground zero for whether or not we suffer about what's happening, what the quality of mind that we're bringing to our experience. Are we resistant? Are we trying to make something happen? Are we building a monument to what it means about me? Those three ways of meeting our experience will determine whether we suffer about it or not. So that's mindfulness of mind. And then mindfulness, the last one I called mindfulness of the Dharma, which is the understanding the laws of nature, and that includes it's very much like the third foundation of mindfulness, but mindfulness of the Dharma is mindfulness of the nature of the mind that is defiled and the nature of the mind that's pure. So it talks about the presence and the absence of hindrances, things that make our life not work so well. It includes the awareness of the different sense experiences, the different bases of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, the inner and the outer sense bases, and that's a whole complicated thing. It includes the Four Noble Truths, the essential wisdom that the Buddha shared, and the realization of that. And how to be able to notice that in real time. And when we don't notice the truth of things, when we don't have clear perception of things, that's another one of the causes of restlessness and agitation. And when we are able to notice the nature of reality, how things fit together, what leads to suffering, what leads to the end of it, that often will cure our reactivity. It will bring calm. So that's the fourth foundation. It's called mindfulness of the Dharma. Third one's mindfulness of mind, the state of the mind that's knowing. Second one, mindfulness of feeling, the feeling tone that accompanies every experience, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And first one is mindfulness of the body. Yeah, those lists. I like to slip them in, but many people like to have them really clearly defined. And I can't tell you how many talks, list talks that I've given in my life, so it's hard for just hold them a little differently than I used to. Anything else you notice, please?
Just curious as to the distinction or similarities between transcendence and the delusional state, or checking out, realizing I haven't been mindful this last little bit, the returning to the breath.
Well, that doesn't sound too much. When we're oblivious to what's going on, that doesn't sound like transcendent. Exactly. So it's. I'm not sure what your question is.
This was my introduction to meditation many years ago. It was in transcendental meditation.
Ah.
So I'm struggling with that. Returning to what was a mantra.
Yes, and that's
just returning to
and transcendental meditation is in general, it's not so much about the transcendent. It's much more about tranquility. It's much more in a body of practices that promotes tranquility. Whenever you put your mind on a single object over and over again, whether it's a mantra or even the breath for that matter, it tranquilizes the mind. It brings, as a byproduct, it brings calm. It's not so much, the transcendental meditation is not so much about wisdom. Insight meditation is much more about wisdom, so you might consider wisdom to be transcendent. Transcendent knowledge. Now, if you do have a calm, if you do have tranquility, sometimes the byproduct of tranquility is the intuition or apperception of the transcendent. But being lost in thought is the, I think, is the opposite of that.
I'm not thinking about being lost in thought at all.
Oh.
But without thought.
Without thought, but being fully conscious.
I think one is fully conscious or conscious in another dimension, a plane, that's all I can.
Well, so there was a clear, immediate comprehension that there was no thought. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah,
that's just an experience of a mind that's empty. And I wouldn't add anything to that about what dimension it is. I think that if sometimes that kind of experience has different qualities to it. Sometimes it has the quality of being where it's just obvious that there is no separation, that one with the universe, non-separate, all of that. Sometimes it's just empty mind. And so your job ultimately with mindfulness is to notice that the mind that's empty. And if it hovers for a long period of time, you can just sense and be mindful of what the qualities are of that. And it may have an impact of shifting your view from a more ordinary perspective to a, as you call it, transcendental, but it may just be a mind that's empty. But the key for what we're doing anyway is that there's clear comprehension that that's what's happening. So if you've been lost in a mind that's empty and that it didn't have mindfulness going along for the ride, there wasn't clear comprehension of it, it's usually some version of spacing out. And there are periods of spacing out that don't have a lot of thought in them. But there wasn't much mindfulness either. So why we're encouraging mindfulness is it's only when mindfulness comes along for the ride, with that particular factor of mind that recognizes what's going on, it's only when there is that quality that there's wisdom, there's learning. We don't learn usually much when we're not comprehending what's happening, and that's. But it's natural. But we go in and out of all those states. Thanks for your question. Did I speak to it? I'm not sure. You have a look on your face that I may not have addressed what you were.
Sorry for the look on my face.
I like the look on your face, but it did have that.
Mindfulness is another dimension to mindfulness. I think is what I'm here for.
Well, there is gross, and there is progressively more subtle mindfulness, and. But for our purposes, we ultimately, gross or subtle, we try to see the equality of all experiences and see what's common to both the gross and the subtle. And that's really the liberating insight of the Buddha, is that none of it is self, all of it's changing, and if you cling to any of it, make an identity around any of it, you'll suffer. And so that's why we try not to have a hierarchy of experiences too much in this tradition. Anyway, there's so much to talk about in that regard, but thanks for listening. I think let's just refresh your posture, and we'll sit a little bit to get rid of all the words, and we'll spend the last 15 minutes, and we'll take lunch at 12:30.